From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of September 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Total Farm Marketing. We'll discuss the perils of insect management with Nick Sider from University of Illinois Extension. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Two items. First, I know many of you are starting to think about fall fertilizer and some of the issues related to the supply chain and Hurricane Ida and otherwise. I'm exploring that now. We'll have more on it later in the week, hopefully. And don't forget to sign up for tomorrow's Price Outlook webinar with the FarmDoc team, Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen. You can do that on our website, look in the calendar, or visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and look for the webinar series.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn at $5.33.5 a bushel today finished 13 and a quarter cents higher. The March at 5.40 3/4, up 12.5, and May contract at 5.44 3/4, that finished 11.5 cents higher. November beans up 12.94 the settlement price. January 13.03.5, up 11.75, and the March contract at 13.07 3/4, 11.5 cents higher. The bean meal futures at 3.35.90, up 2.10, and the bean oil for the day at 58.31, $1.57 higher. Wheat futures soft red December at 7.12 1/4, up 11.5, and the hard red at 7.16, 14.25 cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $129.45, 20 cents lower for 100 pounds. Feeders at 156.50, up rather down $1.65, and lean hogs were 7.5 cents higher there at $72.25. Crude oil at $72.65, up $2.18. Diesel fuel or heating oil 4 7/10 cents higher per gallon at $2.28 cents. Gasoline on wholesale price, the RBOB, at $2.21 even, 3 8/10 cents higher for the day. The S&P 500 at 4465, that's about 31 points higher, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 34,670, up around 200 points. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, now joins us to discuss the marketplace for the day. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for being with us.
Well, hi, Todd. Sure, nice to see a green day at the market for a change.
Yeah, indeed it is. And it is kind of a nice day. It's cooled down some, so it's a good day in lots of ways. And I know farmers are in the field already, just kind of blinking around a little bit, but they'll be in full swing shortly. So happy day. Happy Wednesday, I suppose. Let's start with the support and resistance levels, as usual.
Alrighty. Not a lot of changes for this week, Todd. These are, all, of course, off the monthly continuous chart. December, 46 support, 543 resistance. March, 509 and 574, same as last week. And May, we did have a change, 536 support, 592 resistance. November beans, 1258 support, 1462 resistance. January 1258, 1458, and March 1229 and 1420. And managed money, Todd, was a pretty big surprise, I guess, this week. We actually saw them 7,000 short on soft red wheat compared to 8,000 long last week. 2016 long compared to 238,000 for corn last week. Beans remained the same. 60,000 long, same as last week. They shorted soy meal. They're 3,000 contract short, 11,000 long last week. And they added to their long soy oil position, 61,000 compared to 53,000 long last week. And I think, you know, some of the soy oil, the shifting that's going on there is very much related to canola oil and what's happening up in Canada. Exports for this week. Wheat exports are still running 14% behind, just like they were last week. We need to average 15.2 million bushels to get to the USDA number. Corn, 84% behind from a year ago compared to 86 last week. We need to average 46.5. And soybeans, 94% behind. compared to 97% behind last week. We need to average 39.5 million bushels to reach the USDA projection. And of course, you know, don't get too rattled by those numbers. It's primarily because of Ida and everything that she did.
What's money flow look like in the marketplace at this time?
Well, it's interesting. You know, last week I talked about how volume and money flow, you know, those are the main drivers in the market. And boy, it has been picking up since the 9th of September, the day before the report. And we can see it. You know, like I said, you know, it's nice to see green on the screen for a change. And they've actually come back in. Weather is just a mixed bag. And I think that's supporting the market. There is no sign of any Midwest frost in early October at all. So I think in general, Todd, the market is waiting for yield results. You know, we're hearing tar spot is a real issue across the belt. This morning, I heard low test weight in eastern Iowa and also a lower yield, 187 with only a 50 bushel test weight, and they got rain. So, you know, you got to wonder about the places that didn't get rain. So, you know, the question in my mind is, you know, did that end of August weather really take the top off the corn yield? And when will we find out? You know, we do have the 2022 winter wheat crop insurance prices. They were finalized yesterday at 705 and a half versus 490 and a quarter last year. Can you imagine that? That's huge. And so that might bring some wheat acres out. September quarterly grain stocks is coming out on the 30th. And so, you know, that's going to give us a better look at usage and, you know, who actually has the grain. I think it's interesting to remember that last year's September stocks, corn came in 260 million bushels below expectations because they made a rare cut in the June stocks. And soy stocks actually came in 53 million bushels below trade expectations. So we just can't ever underestimate the risk that's associated with that September 30th crop report. I've seen it just blow the market up so many times. Hopefully that won't be the case this year, but we'll see.
Yeah, so those grain stocks are really important. And again, that's a tally of more than 9,000 places that store all kinds of crops across the Midwest, and they keep track, or Midwest, across the nation, and they keep track of what crops they have on hand. And this is the last one for the year. So it'll be rolled right into the October WASDE report, in fact. So that grain stocks report really important. Speaking of WASDE, I haven't talked to you since the supply and demand report was released last week in that crop production report. What was your take on it?
Well, you know, it was somewhat disappointing and at the same time, not totally unexpected. The one thing that was very obvious is most of the bad news had already been built into the market. And so when they dropped the average corn price by 30 cents, the average bean price by 80 cents, and wheat price by 10 cents, the market kind of just fluffed it off and went from there and moved forward. I thought one of the things, you know, we expected to see more acreage, and they did raise the acreage to 93.3. That was up 612,000 from June. Harvested acres went to 85.08. And that was up 590,000 from June. And that is at a 91.15% harvested of the total acres planted. And that's really right where we normally are. Yield, of course, went up to 176.3. That was 1.7 bushels higher. And therefore, that brought us in at 14,996, which is 246,000 bushels above the estimate. And that's why we bumped up the ending stocks. Soybean acreage came in at 85.7. That was actually down 320,000 from the June planted. And harvested 86.3. That's 99.1% of the planted acres. That's higher than what we normally see. We're normally in that 98.7 or somewhere right there. But the harvested acres were actually down 284,000 from the June planted. And, of course, we know the yield went up to 50.6, so six-tenths of a bushel higher. And the crop itself, actually, the production grew by 35 million bushels. But, you know, it in some ways, I guess, it was a shock. In other ways, not so very much. You know, when you look at our ending stocks, we came in at 1.4 on corn, compared to 1.24 in August. Soybeans 185 compared to 155. Wheat 615 compared to 627. And so, you know, the numbers that came around in the world, of course, the world ending stocks were adjusted because of what happened with us. Now, when you look at world production, Todd, that was kind of interesting. Brazil remained unchanged on corn at 118. This would be for 22, and that's up from 86 this year. So, you know, this is definitely a reflection of what went on double crop corn down there. Argentina went up 2 to 53 million, and that's up from 50 million this year. Beans in Brazil remained unchanged at 144 million metric tons. And, you know, it is shocking that they were able to produce 137 million metric tons this year, as bad as their weather was. But that's just a reflection of more acres. And Argentina stayed unchanged at 52, and that is up from this year at 46 million. So you look at the wheat situation, we're seeing more wheat coming in out of Argentina, less wheat coming in out of Canada, a little less out of Australia, European Union, lots more wheat coming in, and Russia down, actually. So there's a lot to be digested in this marketplace. But I think what it comes down to is we're going to have a real race for acreage and a real fight over what's going to get planted this next year, just because of the fact that everything has a pretty darn good price.
I want to come back to soybeans, because there have been some cancellations of U.S. Cargoes, although I believe they were flipped to Brazil. So it's not as if the Chinese were not taking beans.
No, I mean, I can't say that we didn't expect to see some cancellations. The disappointing part is no corn sales, of course, yet. But they did go down, and they turned to Brazil because they needed to secure cargoes for October. They're really short. So they're buying hand to mouth is basically what they're doing. And so, you know, when you look at the Gulf and the Pacific Northwest, it's hard to believe that they would have an opportunity to really meet what they need right now after the damage, you know, that's been going on. It's totally unusual for them to do this, you know, because we usually dominate this part, because now is when everything is starting here. But the damage that we saw happen because of Ida down in the Gulf certainly has hurt things and put into question how soon everything would be able to be up and running. And at the same time, the Pacific Northwest is just having a terrible time getting beans. And so there's just no more beans in the Pacific Northwest for October shipment. They only have a few left for November and December. And so, you know, they had to do what they had to do. You know, they're seriously behind in their typical purchase pace. When you look at China's, they've only actually completed about 74% of the total planned buying for October. And so nearly 5 million metric tons more need to be put into November's plan to be able to reach what they need, according to AgriCensus. So I think that they'll be coming back to us as soon as they feel assured, I guess, that the ports are up and running. And we keep hearing more and more things are improving down there.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That's Jackie Veg. She is with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Well, farmers around the world have had it pretty darned good for the last couple of decades as it comes to dealing with insects. Generally, the insects that have done the most damage to crops, especially to corn in the Midwest, have been suppressed by genetic modifications to the plant. The first of these GMOs was released in the mid-1990s, and it aimed to control the European corn borer. The BT modification within the plant is termed a high-dose event, and it has been really, really, really effective, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Nick Siter.
That's an insect that's been controlled so effectively by BT crops for such a long time that we really do not deal with that insect close to the same degree as we once did. The other really unique thing about that insect is we've had the same controls available for it for 25 years, I believe it is now, without any resistance development in the United States. And that never happens. I can't really think of another example of something that's been that widely used for that long without resistance developing in a major pest.
Again, the BT genetic modification used to control the European corn borer is a high-dose event designed to kill all European corn borer feeding on the plant. The genetic modification to control the western corn rootworm, however, is a low-dose event. Its first introduction came in the early 2000s, and land-grant entomologists were not convinced at the time that it would be durable. They were right.
We're running out of these products, whether it's BT traits or even to our west, insecticides out in Nebraska. We're running out of products at a time that we're not really developing new products, at least not fast enough to keep up with that. You could think of it as the situation we have with herbicide-resistant weeds right now. We're a few years behind that, but we're on the same path.
It is a path, Illinois Extension entomologist Nick Sider says, which needs to be blocked. It means changing how the western corn rootworm is managed by introducing more variability and rotation into the management scheme.
Because if we rely on the same control year after year after year, we know exactly where that's going to get us.
The end result will be western corn rootworms that are resistant to all available control methods. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I hope your day is as gorgeous as it is here. Feels a little bit like fall, kind of 73 and clear when we're talking. It's a really nice day, and I'll take them for a while, I guess.
Absolutely, we all will. We're a little warmer over here than you are, but it's still beautifully clear, and the winds are relatively light, so it's going to be good, and enjoy it while you can, because there are opportunities for some showers coming up, but the bottom line doesn't look too bad.
Well, we'll talk about those showers in just a bit, but I do want to start along the line from Texas, Houston to New Orleans in particular, because of the export elevators and the situation that Ida created, and then, of course, that Nicholas may have compounded. How much rainfall did they get, and are those storms done now?
Well, I certainly hope Ida is done, but Nicholas, of course, is a depression. It's wandering around not too far from Lake Charles, Louisiana. This is the southwest corner of Louisiana. And it's not going anywhere anytime soon. It is going to fall apart in that area, but the influx of moisture from the Gulf of Mexico is going to be with them down there on that central Gulf Coast through the entire 7-day period coming up. It'll rain every day in some of those areas. The impact from Nicholas is probably not nearly as dramatic, of course, as it was with Ida, but we are dealing with a gradual increase in moisture, and flooding is going to become a little bit more of an issue. So far, the rains that have occurred this week have run up to about 7 inches on the Texas coast. And in southern Louisiana, we've seen totals run from about 3 to 6 inches. And what's interesting about the rainfall that's coming up over the coming week is that it will be a little bit of a slow occurrence. I mean, we're not just going to get deluges of rain day and night. It's going to be scattered showers and thunderstorms that are going to be more concentrated than the average scattered showers and storms. But we're going to have breaks in the precipitation so that some runoff can take place. And that is really important. So I do not expect to have a real serious issue. There has not been excessive wind with Nicholas outside of the Texas coastal areas, and that occurred for a brief period on Monday, and we've been, with light winds ever since. So I don't think you're going to find too much of an issue outside of just rainy weather. Now, some of the sugarcane in southern Louisiana is going to lose sucrose values. That's the sugar content in the cane, and that's going to probably reduce some of the production that comes from there. And I should clarify, too, there are pockets in Louisiana that have received far more rain than what I just described. We've got upwards to 10 inches in a couple of spots. So there are areas that are in worse shape than others.
How about, did this have an impact at all, give some rainfall to the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Kansas, Oklahoma, that area?
No, the storm was really concentrated close to the coast, and there was some showers that got into Oklahoma, but they really weren't even associated with Nicholas. But a weekend ago, we had some good rains that occurred across parts of hard red winter wheat country. And that was really good, timely rainfall for some areas in Kansas and some neighboring areas. And there's a lot of country out there that's looking pretty good, at least for the moment. And I should back up. That was actually the weekend before last that we got that greater rain. We are seeing waves of heat occurring in hard red winter wheat country, and that is removing that moisture about as quickly as it was put into the ground. So conditions as we go from now through the end of September and into early October are likely to continue drying down. And so even though conditions today are really not bad out that way, they're going to deteriorate quite a bit as we go out through the next few weeks. And the long range outlook is not very promising for a lot of moisture in those areas. We'll have to continue to watch the situation, but the winter looks pretty dry, and so does late autumn. We do have an opportunity in the next few weeks for some timely rain, though.
What do you think the forecast for the next couple of weeks looks like from Fargo to Columbus for harvest that will be coming in from the Midwest, corn and soybeans?
You know, we have an upper-level cutoff low-pressure center that's going to develop this late weekend and into the early part of next week, and it's going to be a slow-moving system. The upper Midwest and the northeastern plains will likely see quite a bit of rain from this event. It will begin on Monday and will continue in at least a portion of that area you just described all the way through Wednesday of next week. And then we'll take a little bit of a break in the latter part of the week and we'll see what happens tropically, because we have a couple of other tropical systems that could be threatening the U.S. And if those come to fruition, then maybe if they threaten the East Coast, then maybe we'll go back into a drier mode for the Midwest. But if they threaten the Gulf Coast, of course, then we run the risk of bringing another system northward from down that way. So for the coming week to 10 days, it looks like the upper Midwest, eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, some areas in Nebraska and Iowa will probably end up with some 1 to 3 and some local 3-inch plus amounts of rain. That precipitation shouldn't hold together as it goes through the eastern Midwest. There'll be some lighter rains there, maybe a half inch to an inch and a half.
And then what do you see in South America?
Everything right now is pretty tranquil. We're seeing routine rain events in southern Brazil, primarily from Rio Grande do Sul up into Paraná and neighboring areas of Paraguay. And that particular area typically gets shower activity routinely this time of the year. That's one of the regions that where certainly winter wheat is still developing in Rio Grande do Sul. And we are also planting early season corn in Paraná and parts of the immediate neighboring states there. So this moisture is really good for them. A little farther to the north, of course, we have that center west and center south crop region where all the soybeans are produced in high volumes in most years. And we're waiting now for the next 2 or 3 weeks to see when the seasonal, I should call it pre-monsoonal season, rainfall starts to occur. That's what usually stimulates early season soybean planting. And we believe that we're going to get started better than last year, but we're still waiting for that to happen. And I think we're going to have to wait about 10 days before we start scattering showers through some of that region.
Hey, thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.